Welcome into the PGA Draftcast live YouTube show and podcast. You'll notice something a little bit different today. There is no Joel. It's actually Joel's birthday today. So we thought that we'd give him the night off, let him go and celebrate his birthday turning 30, none of your business, and let him go and celebrate. So just Spencer and I tonight, but obviously a fantastic week last week to recap. An exciting tournament, the Zozo Championship, with a few stud golfers, not as many as we're used to at this event. Obviously looks a little bit weaker than what we've seen in the previous editions of the Zozo Championship. Spence, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. You kind of alluded to it at the beginning of this show. I know you had the JT post and outright. Both of us had Taylor Pendrith for first round leader. Very solid week across the board. I'll let you talk a little bit deeper though about that post in play that you had.
Yeah, I mean, look, fantastic week. Obviously, both you and I hitting that first round leader, insane 40-1. And then what a great sport golf is that you can hit a 40-1 ticket and then in the same week hit an outright winner at 35-1. I mean, what a game. Like, why would you not be involved in golf, really? And a lot of that came down to, I spoke about on the show last week about the weather that we were going to see in Las Vegas. Someone else might have said it, but for me, I didn't see anybody else talking about the weather at all last week. I certainly didn't see anyone mentioning that Friday was going to be delayed, as I gave out last week as well. We got it absolutely spot on. The weather was horrific, as we predicted. Only 25 players made the cut from the bad wave. We recommended going Thursday a.m., Friday p.m. That ended up being about four shots better than the alternative wave, and that really did just give us such an advantage in terms of players. And look, I mean, if you're a Doug Gimbacker, you're probably feeling a bit aggrieved because he was on the wrong wave, still only finished one shot off JT Poston. A pretty impressive performance from him, able to find a putter. So no, look, always happy to victory lap things, as you know, Spence. Just another reason that you should be grabbing our promo in the description. You use Deep Dive Golf when signing up to win daily in the promo below. You'll get 50% off all your premium membership categories. So that's as low as $7.50 a week. So it is next to nothing. And when we're giving out winners at 35-1, it doesn't take a genius to work out that you are getting amazing value for money, as well as access to all of our other sports. I see you've got the Vegas Raiders hat on as well. So obviously we've got a ton of NFL experts, NHL experts, MLB playoffs are coming up as well. So a lot to cover over at Win Daily, and help you win more at all the sports that you follow. But Spence, do you want to shout out the Raiders at all? And do you want to give us a breakdown of the course in Japan this week, Cordia Narashino Country Club?
There's not much positive stuff to say about the Raiders. So I like this hat. I will say that. That's one of the reasons why I wear it, above that being one of the worst teams in the NFL. They're going in the wrong direction. But I will give a course breakdown. Narashino Country Club is going to be about an hour's drive east of Tokyo. And it features what I would call a very claustrophobic design. You have substantial tree-lined intangibles that are in place throughout. Golfers are going to have to move the ball in multiple directions because of the facility's dog legs. I naturally think that puts extra credits in the bucket for accuracy over distance when you're talking about a less than 7,100-yard course. That doesn't present that bombs-away appeal. But the one thing I want to say, David, to where I added a little bit more weight for length in my model than most people did. And it's kind of that outside of the box narrative. We obviously don't have Stat Tracker or Shot Link here to get all the information. But one of the things I noticed when diving into this, and it's kind of the thing that I've noticed the last couple iterations of this tournament, had Keegan Bradley 2 years ago when he won, had Colin Morikawa last year. And I know we're talking about extremely quality ball strikers rather than this distance answer. But one of the things that comes into play is you get this really impactful scoring production and also the avoidance standpoint when a driver is in hand. We see that when diving into the five par four holes that land between 486 to 505 yards. Those are going to be the most challenging locations for the week. And then you also have this really unique assortment from the three par fives. One's easy, the second is pretty medium, and then the third one is this 608-yard really long hole to where 2-3 years ago, when I used to update my model every single year, You had about a 19-20% birdie or better percentage. Obviously, that's about as low as you see on tour for any event. It has gotten easier over the last couple iterations of this contest. It now yields more like a 24-25% birdie rate, but you know, it kind of goes back to that narrative of what I was just talking about of you have your really impactful holes on those par fours where you need to avoid mistakes, and then those three par fives where you need to try to make a score. So I do think driving distance is a little bit more important than a lot of people are going to weigh into their models. It's not necessarily something that's overbearing inside of my sheet. I look more for strokes gained off the tee with difficult fairways, strokes gained off the tee with longer rough, threw that all into the mix. But there is a little bit of driving distance more than I guess public narrative would lead most people to believe.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that as well. I think a really interesting stat this week, which I've used previously to good success here, is a just good drive percentage, which takes into combination either being really accurate or being really long off the tee. And it kind of weighs those both and kind of produces some interesting results that I think this week is, as you've mentioned, kind of it is finding a strength off the tee, not necessarily one or the other. You can be highly accurate and avoid all the trouble off the trees, or you can be really long with the driver, for example. And then, as you said, for those that long par five over 600 yards, go for it in two when others in the field, you know, the Andrew Putnams of the PGA Tour can't go and reach that green in two, for example. So I think that's a really interesting narrative. As you mentioned, elite ball strikers have done really well here. Approach play has been really indicative of good success. Interesting to have Zoysia grass here as well. Not something that we see all that often on the PGA Tour. Other examples you can look at are TPC Southwind and TPC Craig Ranch for guidance, where they do use Zoysia grass. Look into some of the approach metrics there. It's a pretty. Are we back? Pretty polarizing grass type. And golfers have spoken about both it being producing flyers occasionally, or they feel that it's great and it's like hitting a ball off a golf tee every single time. So can be really polarizing. So maybe keep your eye out. People found success that FedEx St. Jude, I think, is a real key. TPC Craig Ranch on approach particularly, I think, is a good guide as well. The other one I sort of, and I hate drawing parallels to Augusta National anywhere, but there are correlations between leaderboards at Augusta National and here. You look at players like Hideki Matsuyama, who've won and finished second. Tiger Woods obviously completed a victory here before going on to the Return to Glory victory at the Masters in April, a few months later as well. So I think those are key guides. In the meantime, not only did I give out JT Poston as the winner last week, I had him on my DFS team, along with Taylor Prendrith, along with Harry Hall, Harris English. We had four in the top 10 last week, and that was enough to see me get victory in the PGA Draftcast last week. So I have the selection of the draft order this week. I'll bring the draft board up. And I have gone with myself in first, Spence in second, and team audience. You will be on the wraparound at the end here. And I'm not going to take the obvious pick of Xander Schauffele here. I think that he will get a ton of ownership. I think that he's had an epic year. Obviously, he's won in Tokyo before at the Olympics, won the gold medal a few, 30 minutes or so away at a different golf course. But I'm going to go and take Hideki Matsuyama at the top of the board here. I think that he has also had a landmark year. Obviously, he's got a great record at the Masters as a previous champion and wearer of a green jacket there. He's a previous champion here. He's finished second here before. But if we look at the golf courses where Hideki has done well, he's also won at TPC Southwind, another Zoysia grass property. He has also had a great record at Riviera, where he's won, another classical designed tree lined golf course. He's had a landmark year with the victories he's managed to rattle off, and he is absolutely going to be one of those at the top of the market who has put in time and effort to coming here and being prepped. Many of these guys we haven't seen for 2 months. You know, Hideki Matsuyama is a cult hero. He's basically a god in Japan, and you know that he will be taking his preparation every bit as serious as any signature event as he is for the Zozo Championship. Whereas some of the others, you may question whether they're coming in with a bit of rust, whether they're a bit jet-lagged, whether this is really the most important tournament for them. I've got none of those questions for Hideki Matsuyama. Very happy to start my lineup with him there. Spence, you'll be on the clock after me, but any thoughts on Hideki this week? And then you'll be in there for your first selection.
I've kind of made this argument throughout the space to where Xander should be the favorite. So I don't want this narrative to get lost, but there is a very strong big three, according to my math. And I don't always agree with where DraftKings or odds boards place some of these golfers near the top. But this, to me, was one of those spots where Xander should be the favorite. I thought it's very close between Hideki and Colin Morikawa. There's a bit of a gap from those three to everybody else. And it's going to lead me into my pick right now. There was one golfer for me that I was much higher on than public consensus I thought was going to be when this started. And we've seen this number just get decimated from the opening price. I got him at 35-1 at open. You're going to find more in that like 25-1 range. Now there's a lot of, I don't want to call them syndicate places, but places that provide information that I think a lot of people end up copying. And unfortunately, yes, exactly. Kurt Kitayama with it. So one of the things that I found from within my model, and I don't want to say all strokes gain data is exactly equal, because what Kurt Kitayama has done is not necessarily the same as when he does it in lower field tournaments like last week than when you do it against Scottie Scheffler or Xander Schauffele. So not all strokes gain data is going to be equal in this spot. But when I ran over the last 24 rounds and looked for the best ball striker in this field, albeit in a weaker contest, Kurt Kitayama was the number one player for me in ball striking. And normally what I want to find, and specifically here when you're obviously taking a ton of ownership into account here, I think he's going to be the second or third highest owned player on the board when it's all said and done. I normally want to see that increase in projected putting. It's something that I'm always looking for. And unfortunately, we don't have that answer here from Kitayama. I don't know if you could really put him anywhere where you're going to get that answer. But the one thing that you do have that's at least noteworthy is you have a harder scoring course. And a lot of times, and Hideki Matsuyama throughout his career has kind of been the poster child for this answer. You throw him on difficult scoring courses and all of a sudden you don't need to make as many putts to actually win that event. So we've seen Kitayama go to a tournament like Bay Hill, take down that title in a much stronger field than this. I think the strokes gain metrics are really pointing in a positive direction for him. Don't love the ownership. Didn't necessarily foresee this happening when the week started, but really like him this week as what I deem to be the fourth best player in this tournament.
Yeah, look, I mean, Kitayama's approach numbers speak for themselves at this point. Like, he has been absolutely striping it. I think it's perhaps surprising that he is the best in this field on approach in the last 3 months. Now, even if you go to somewhere like Datagolf, Datagolf use true strokes gained. So they actually weight the strokes gained based on the quality of the opposition that you're playing. They basically like break everything out compared to what Xander Schauffele would be expected to do. It was like the average plus two strokes gained golfer. And so Kitayama leading by like not even a small margin. Like, he's got a sizable gap at the top in terms of approach. It's promising. I agree, he's going to need to find the putter. The tournament that he does, he's probably going to come out and have like a Doug Gim type performance where he finished, you know, Doug Gim finished second last week, and the week that he can come out and putt it like even just even par, he's going to contend for tournaments for sure. A little bit chalky. You are going to need to be a bit careful how you deploy him. You can't start with, like, I think Xander Kitayama is going to be a really chalky start to a build and then push you into very similar spots further down the board to a lot of other lineups. Audience, again, their selections, and they have taken Bo Hosler at 8,900 to start off their selections. That is a steal from the audience. I would have taken Bo Hosler on the way back, so I'm going to need to shuffle my lineup a little bit and make some other decisions. I tipped Bo Hosler at this tournament last year at 40-1, and to be honest, given the quality of his play and the weaker field that we see here than we saw in 2023, I would have expected his odds to be a lot lower than they were. It's only dropped about 5 points from that 40-1 mark he was at last year. And he has been on a fantastic tier of golf. Yes, he's still struggled to get across the line. I've said on the show, I'll say it again, I do believe Bo Hosler will win a PGA Tour tournament at some time. He'll probably fall into the victory. Last year, he was the 36-hole leader of this tournament. He ended up finishing second when he was on my betting card here. I do like the golf course for him. I do like the play that we're seeing from him lately. So we just need one more from the audience. They're debating between Andrew Putnam and Doug Gim. I have a lean between those two, although I do like them both. I think they're both playing well. Both came out of the wrong wave last week, at the Shriners in Las Vegas. They both had really strong performances there at TPC Summer, despite being in the wrong wave. So I think they're both great picks, but I prefer one to the other. But Spence, if you were the audience here, who would you be going with, Putnam or Gunn?
I mean, anybody who follows my content will know my answer, and I think it's the opposite of the answer that you're going to give would be my guess. I could be wrong on that. As far as the Bo Hostler pick goes, if it makes you feel any better, David, I was going to take Hostler at the 202 there. So there is so much to like about Bo Hostler's game. I talked about it last week when I drafted him on the wrong wave, ends up making the push up the leaderboard. Doug Gim would have been the selection for me that I would have taken. Like, if we want to talk about a player that should have won a golf tournament, to me, it's Doug Gim. It's, if you could put this on an equal playing field where he doesn't have a four-stroke disadvantage, he was the best golfer in that tournament last week. So I really like that start from the audience of Hostler and Gim. I don't exactly know where I want to go now, because pretty much any iteration of the build of how I wanted to do this was going to be Kitayama, hopefully both of those two names, but at least one of the two. So credit to the audience for a very solid start.
Yeah, and I would have said Doug Gim as well. That would have been my selection too. I think, you know, Doug Gim's one of these guys. I mean, he won the Ben Hogan Award. You know, other players who won that are Victor Hovland, John Rahm, Patrick Handley. Just the best of the best. And Doug Gim hasn't really lived up to that kind of mantle that he had as a college golfer. But we've seen flashes of it. And I think last week, as you said, like he was in such a bad wave in terms of the weather. Like, to finish second was incredibly impressive. Again, gaining with putter, but only slightly. That's sufficient for Doug Gim to get into contention, because his ball striking is great. And this really is a golf course that identifies some of the best ball strikers in the game. So do really like that from the audience. I think if you're not starting with the Xander Schauffele, it's a really interesting way that you can start a build there. So very nice job there from the audience. And Spencer, you are on the clock with your second selection, please.
I don't know if I necessarily need to take Xander here. Like, I don't know if anybody can afford him, and it's not necessarily the route I wanted to go. I'm trying to throw in some random names to figure out where I would be at if I did go Xander. And one of the things I want to say about specifically a Xander Kitayama build, I mean, that is probably number one, number two in chalk. That's not necessarily where you want to be. The other thing that I would want to caution people by going this route is I kind of have talked about this in every no-cut tournament. I know the narrative becomes that when you go very aggressive near the top and you think that you're down in the $6,000 range and you can kind of just throw darts, that's never the optimal path of taking multiple players down in the $6,000 range. It's just too much where you have to be exact with it. I am going to take Xander. I do not love this. This is not how I envision this build starting. It is the number one player in my model for win equity. It's the number one and number two owned players with this start. I feel like I've almost taken on the Joel role right now of just going chalk at the top with the two names and trying to figure it out from there. But, you know, I think there's a reason why Joel wins all the time with us. So I'm going to take on that, and I'll figure this out. I do not love where I'm at though, price wise. And I do not love this construction necessarily.
Well, way to go, audience. You, yep. As Zach says, you've got him spinning. You put Spencer in real tiz, and he's had to take the absolute chalk monster start of Xander Schauffele and Kirk Kitayama. Look, I mean, Xander's clearly the class in this field. I don't mind the start at all. It's just you are starting a build like this. As Spencer mentioned, you are going to need to get different somewhere, especially in a large GPP. You are going to have to either leave a ton of money on the table, you're going to have to take some risks, you're going to take some players that you were really uncomfortable taking, because in a small field like this, you kind of got to nail it, and you've really got to like get five of those guys in the top 10 at least to be taking out some contention as well as the winner, obviously. But look, if Xander goes and wins this tournament, I don't think anybody in this universe is going to be surprised absolutely whatsoever. So I will commend you on the start and grabbing some great value. I would have been shocked if Xander went past five picks here. I am now seeing where Spence is placed in terms of your salary, mate. I'm going to go and live in that salary for a little bit and just make sure that I get the guys from there that I need to build the rest of this lineup. So I am going to start off with Takumi Kanaya, the Japanese golfer, at 7,200. Now, we've seen time and time again at this tournament, right, in terms of the structure of it, 10 players from the Japanese Golf Tour get to earn entry onto this into this tournament, get a PGA Tour start. It's a huge deal for them. And typically, it's been a really strong field. Like, if the top guys were going to play a tournament in the fall, it was the Zozo Championship. And we're not really seeing that strong of a field this time. I mean, you have got an incredibly strong start in terms of Xander, Morikawa, Matsuyama, Tagawa, but then after that, there's a steep, steep drop off in the class this year, and the rest of them are really just guys fighting for their PGA Tour cards going into next year. Takumi Kanaya is in fabulous form on the Japanese Golf Tour. He's just finished second. He won, and then he finished fourth in his last three starts. Again, he is a talented amateur who a lot of people expected big things from. He's in great form, and back in 2022 at this event, he actually finished seventh in a much stronger field at this golf course. So he has shown an ability on this course before, and he's in fabulous form. Two wins on the season already. I know that he'll be going out, making the most of starts. He's also a very accurate golfer, which I do like. If you are going to be either extremely accurate or extremely long off the tee, I think one of those is a benefit, and Takumi Kanaya is a very, very accurate golfer. So I do appreciate that for him. The next I'm going to go and take Mac Meisner. He is rating really well, especially in terms of his approach metrics. He was third in his last start at the Black Desert Championship on approach. His approach numbers are always fantastic, though, so I really do like that correlation. He's both strong and long and straight off the tee, which I do think is a real benefit at this golf course. The fact he's got both of those strings to his bow is impressive, and with those approach metrics, he rates out really well. The other thing I'd mention is that you do see an increased dispersion of shots between 150 to 200 yards on approach at this golf course, nearly 35% of all strokes, about two more than usual within that range of 150 to 200 yards. Mac Meisner is actually one of the best in this field within that approach range as well, so I do think that he's got that going from sitting 95th at the moment in the FedEx Cup ranking, so not exactly home and hosed in terms of keeping this PGA Tour card, but a strong finish here will go a long way to securing his starts in 2025. So Spencer, go to you. Any thoughts on Mac Meisner and Takumi Kanaya, and then you will be on the clock.
I mean, it feels like I take Mac Meisner almost every single week that we do the show. So anytime anybody takes Meisner, it will be a direct steal, unfortunately. It's kind of right in that price range, obviously, of I have 7,325 left. Meisner is one of the big upside climbers for me in this sheet. Specifically, I don't have an outright ticket on him. I have a very small card this week because I think there's a bunch of different ways that you can view this. But to me, it's the big three at the top, and unless you have one of those big three, I'm not necessarily looking to take on a bunch of exposure. I took Kiriyama at 35-1. I took Doug Gim at 45-1. I called the card there, and I didn't add to it. But I'm going to give a name where I'm pretty sure, David, that if we could go back, and I'm sure there's an easy way for me to do this, and figure out who has the most ownership ever constructed through three picks, it's going to be me, unfortunately. And I understand that in – it's one of those situations right now where I do think that this is still more of a wild card option than the general public seems to think that it is at this particular moment. There is massive upside, though. You talked about that long iron proximity. This is a golfer that at his very best was a major championship winner because of his ability to drive the ball and to find his strengths from 200 plus yards. The putter
Gary
is
Woodland.
Yes, the putter is always going to be a concern, but he gained 3.7 strokes putting at the Shriners. And if you look at the ball striking marks since this restart, I know the Pro Core Championship, there's a miscut there. He lost 6.4 with the putter, but look at the Sanderson, 7.5 approach, Shriners, 5 approach. Those are on the positive notes there. Off the tee, 2.7 and 1.7. He also gained 3 strokes off the tee at the Pro Core. I do think, and I will say this, this is a better upside GPP sort of a play. I'm not playing him for safety markets. Like, a top 20 is the max that I would be going back to. Like, I prefer this as a top 10, top 20 sort of a bet or out to winning. But when we talk about recent strokes gain metrics, number one in my model, Kitayama. Number two in my model, Doug Gim. Number three in my model, for all those reasons, Gary Woodland. So a lot of ownership on this build. I do think that there's an easy way for me to differentiate this lineup, but there's definitely a lot of popularity.
There is. I grimaced when you took Gary Woodland there, because he was a key golfer for me. Coming back on the term has got to be taken. So there's another steal from Spieds. Always going to happen in these smaller fields where you've got 70-odd players. So, look, it's nearly a year now since Gary Woodland had the brain tumor removed. And he spoke in an interview a couple of days ago about how he's finally starting to feel like himself again. The results are starting to come. He's also started working with Scotty Scheffler's coach, by the way, for the last 2 months. And that's kind of actually been when his game has turned around and the correlations occurred in terms of his approach metrics coming back. The putter starting to warm up as well. I think there's a lot going for him. The fact that he's both long and straight at the tee and is such a strong driver of the golf ball, I think, is a real benefit. The approach play is fantastic. Really, really is key to success at this golf course previously. And, yeah, as I mentioned, the fact that he's 1 year out of that brain surgery and recovery from the removal of his brain tumor and starting to get his confidence back again, you know, he will have every motivation to come out and play really well here. Still not completely home and hosed to keep his PGA Tour card either. So he'll be wanting to make sure that he is staying in the big dance. And I think it would be a very, very emotional win if he was able to complete the victory here. Also finished a fifth as well previously at TPC River Highlands, a golf course that Keegan Bradley won before he won the Zozo Championship. Also, Brendan Steele, who finished second at Accordia, has 9 out of 12 top 25 finishes at TPC River Highlands. So another quite good link there in terms of course history. So the audience have gone. They've taken Matthew Kuchar and the coach and Colin Morikawa with their two selections. No qualms with either of them really from me. Colin Morikawa, obviously past winner here. Hasn't won since, although you could technically say he got a victory at the Tour Championship, being the lowest 72-hole score at that event in terms of the official world golf rankings. He counted as a win that week, believe it or not. Dubious whether that should count, because you don't really feel the same pressure when you were trying to win on the shadow leaderboard. And then Matt Kuchar is obviously showing some decent form as of late. Some concern maybe about the lack of distance, but a player of very, very good class and decent record at the Augusta National Masters, obviously, as well. Spence, any thoughts on Kuch and Morikawa before you make your fourth selection here?
It was inevitable, probably, in an event like this, that Morikawa was going to go off the board at some point. Obviously, I can't afford him. So from a game theory standpoint, I don't know what you have planned, David. I think you have enough money that you could definitely have found yourself in that route. So probably the audience, I don't know if you would have done it, but probably the audience, at least for safety reasons, might want to secure their guy. As I said, him and Hideki, to me, we could argue about what prices should be. And I will make an argument that Xander at 4.5 to 1 is too low on it, but probably looking at a spot where, you know, Xander should be about 6. Morikawa and Hideki are more in that 7 to 1 range. Like, it's very close between those three at the end of the day. So no problems there. I am going to go to a golfer, which unfortunately for me, David, I think that I had every potential to win this draft cast last week. And unfortunately, the McNeely Griffin route would have given me the 6 of 6. I took Matthew McCarty. I ended up falling down that path there. But even going into Sunday there with the extra player, I had a chance and I got burnt from JJ Spahn really not producing. And I also got burnt from Patrick Fishburne. Fishburne has been this all over the map sort of golfer over the last handful of weeks. You have the terrible performance in his hometown event. And then I talked last week about it being the ultimate buyback spot for him and kind of lands in the middle of, I think you got a fair finish for him and a fine result for what you paid for. But I would make an argument. I understand the proximity numbers leave something to be desired, but I would make an argument that a contest like this, that is a little bit more challenging, might actually end up being a better test for him. All the bogey avoidance numbers, the scrambling data points I have, all point in that direction for it. And it's the same answer I gave last week, which so happened to continue again. He has a tournament leading 24 consecutive rounds of shooting par or better. a par at this course on any given day is usually a pretty decent score. You're going to need better than that to end up winning, but I think he's going to be able to keep himself safer than a lot of players down in this range. So I will take Patrick Fishburn here. I also think from an ownership standpoint, this is a little bit of leverage. I see about 7%. So it'll differentiate this very chalky build that I have at the top.
Yeah, definitely a good differentiation there. Yeah, I've even got a little bit lower. I've got him around 6% at the moment. And I mean, bear in mind, right, and it always happens in these no-cut events with a smaller field. We've seen it in signature events as well, that you do still get higher ownership numbers, right? So just bear that in mind when you're constructing your lineups and you're seeing a guy at like 6% ownership, and that's not necessarily making the guy talky. Actually, he's probably a contrarian player compared to some of these other guys who, like, if you're going to get like a 15 to 20% golfer, that's going to be quite common in this type of field where some of that ownership condenses a bit. I think Fishburn has a really nice, well-rounded game. I think that's potentially suitable for the golf course. He's long and straight off the tee. We've seen the approach numbers starting to really improve in the last 3 months as well. So I think it's a nice buyback spot for him potentially as a contrarian route, as you mentioned. I am going to go and take another Japanese golfer. I'm going to take Shugo Imahira, who last week won the Japanese Open, their national championship. Prior to that, he finished 6th and 5th on the Japanese tour, and then a 4th 2 starts before that. Again, a golfer who's in great form. He's made a couple of starts in the Masters before, finished 18th here previously back in 2022 as well. As I mentioned, you do just see a number, there's usually 3 or 4 Japanese golfers who manage to finish in the top 20 at this event. They've just got the ability of being acclimatized. They're not jet lagged. They've played the golf courses before. They know the climate. They know how to approach these courses, especially with the unique kind of double green system that you get here, unique to this golf course, because they have a winter green and a summer green as well. So they know how to approach these courses. And the fact that he's on a tier at the moment, he's had a decent result recently in the Japanese tour. And then obviously he's had previous history here in a much stronger event. I think that he is sneaky value potentially down at 6,900. And I'm going to pair him with a contrarian play who maybe shouldn't be as contrarian as he appears, and that's Will Zalatoris at $9,000. Now, Will Zalatoris is not going to rate out well for you because of the hip injury, but since that last year, we have seen him start to finally get his distance back, to start to get his approach numbers and ball striking back. And we really saw that towards the end of the FedEx Cup playoffs. He finished 12th at the FedEx St. Jude TPC Southwind. As I mentioned earlier in the show, this is always a grass course in terms of the fairways. He's won that tournament as well before, so you've got that going too. And then he finished 13th at the BMW Championship the week later, and he really started to look like the Will Zalatoris that we know and love. We know that when he's at his best, he's an elite ball striker. He's played at Augusta 3 times. He's never finished with the 9th, including a runner-up on debut and a 6th and a 9th back earlier this year. So he is just playing better golf now than I think people are giving him credit for. The stats aren't necessarily going to like him, and as a result of that, you're going to get low ownership here on a golfer who at his best is an elite level talent who actually has win equity if he's healthy. So given that he's had that 2-month break, again, I don't have those questions. Same with Matsuyama. I don't have those questions with Zalatoris of, like, has he been practicing? He is wanting to get right. He is wanting to get through his injury and get back to his best. He will see this as a key tournament to go and do that. And he would have been playing a lot over the last 2 months to get his game back into top ship shape. Whereas other golfers at the top, who knows how much they've been practicing? They've probably taken a month off, rightly so, given the amount of events these guys play. But Will Zalatoris would have been out there getting prepped and ready for this event. So, Spence, we'll go to you for your 5th selection and any thoughts on Imahira and Zalatoris here.
I think Zalatoris is savvy for all the reasons that you just talked about. I don't want to say it's similar to the Woodland discussion, because Woodland has more of that recent form that you can point towards. And I always mention this on the show. I run my data from a much longer duration of time than anybody in the space. So somebody like Gary Woodland is always going to be slower to move for me than maybe it would be for whoever that's running it shorter. I think Zalatoris, though, he's mentioned being healthy. We've gotten back-to-back quality starts from him. There's a certain upside that he possesses, and it's kind of one of the things that I talked about where – if we want to look at Zalatoris Thomas, and I think Justin Thomas is another interesting name to talk about here, and Homa, Zalatoris and Thomas are so much more ready to get into the winner's circle, in my opinion, than what we have with Homa. Thomas graded inside of the top 10 of my model this week. There were upside totals for him when we look at specific comp driving courses that pushed him even higher than that. I think Thomas is a very savvy DFS play. And then for Zalatoris here, a lot of that same narrative is going to hold true. So I like the Zalatoris play quite a bit. As I move forward with my lineup here, I've talked about this in articles and I've talked about it even on shows a little bit. There's a pretty massive discrepancy in my model from a lot of these $6,000 golfers. I think a guy like Shugo probably is more of like that Japanese, the price is there for a reason. He probably should even be higher than that. I think a lot of these other guys, though, that you're going to have more stats on in the $6,000 range, to me, there's a discrepancy between those names and a lot of these options that we get to in the lower 7,000s, whether that's a Mac Meisner, a Patrick Fishburne. We can kind of go across the board and talk about a lot of those names. I'm trying to figure out which way I want to do this. I don't know if it necessarily – I mean, I'm kind of in a spot with the audience here where – it could go either way. I don't necessarily want to end up taking my own pick one way or the other.
I was going to say that you're very clearly vamping and rattled at this point, Spencer, and just trying to buy time to get into
obviously the lineup. I mean, the lineup went in an opposite direction. I didn't start this show thinking I'm taking Xander Schauffele. He fell to me with the way that this was, and I much prefer this to be Kitayama, Hostler, Gim as a start, or Hideki. Like any of those options would have been more of the route I would have preferred to have gone. But in the situation I'm in right now, I am going to bet on some of the upside of my model. I know I always talk about no cut tournaments and wanting to bet in on a little bit of that upside. Obviously, there's some volatility that's going to come into play here for a golfer who, for the most part, has gone miscut. I know one of those is a withdrawal, but I'm going to take Andrew Novak at 7,100, one of the substantial climbers in my model for expected putting on similar green complexes. So I like Andrew Novak here. I think there's a lot of upside to be had for the price tag that we're paying. There's volatility, though, at the end of the day.
Yeah, look, I do like Andrew Novak this week. And it's just, again, it's got, I think, probably a similar story maybe to Patrick Fishburne in terms of they were on a tier. Maybe it's a bounce back spot where people have been. Oh, sorry, I don't know why that's. I've just noticed that the draft board's dropped off. A player who's been on a tier recently, who is obviously just like had a start or two that was wrong. I think people get scared off by the WD at the Black Desert and won't realize that he would basically already miss the cut at that point. He had a 54 foot putt. For bogey, and he needed a par, or I think he actually maybe even needed birdie to make the cut, so just threw a tantrum and picked up a ball and walked off. So there was absolutely nothing to do with that withdrawal. Stuff like that always puts people off, especially if they're not following the game as closely as we are. So good contrarian option there. And Novak at his best is a really good ball strike, and that really is the key for this golf course, is identified over the years some of the best iron players on the PGA Tour. Novak has put himself kind of in that conversation, especially in terms of the quality of the full series guys. So I think he's a good option for you down at that 7,100 mark. The audience have gone with Charlie Hoffman, accusations that you have stolen with Andrew Novak. So that's one.
I mean, it makes them feel better. The other pick I was going to make was Charlie Hoffman. So it's a steal, eye for an eye, I guess.
Either way. Yeah, well, they've got one back on you then as well. It's one of these things. I mean, they took Hosler and Gim to really throw your lineup into all sorts of jeopardy at the beginning. I mean, and I cannot blame you whatsoever for taking Xander Schauffele in the fifth spot, because if you come back to me, like if you hadn't taken Xander, I was already thinking, like, how the hell am I going to build a lineup with Matsuyama and Schauffele at the top, and how I'm going to end up with sort of those two and four guys from the Japan Tour in order to forward my build. It looks like it is Chan Kim to round out the lineup. I'm probably less high on Charlie Hoffman than you are, but I'll leave it to you to speak to some of the upside that you see in Charlie Hoffman as a differentiation there. And then Chankham, I've always got time for. He was on the wrong. He didn't have a great tournament at TPC Summerlin, but prior to that, he's been very, very good. And his approach play is excellent as well. And as I mentioned time and again, that has been the thing that is found people's success around this golf course. So, Spence, I'll leave it to you to wrap up on Hoffman and Kim and then finish off your lineup as well.
A lot of it has to do with the strokes gain total on, I called it, non-easy scoring courses. He was inside the top 10 of this field, also inside the top 15. When you throw him on strokes gain total for par 70, you throw some of this under 7,200-yard range into the mix. Also inside the top 16 for recent ball striking. So the numbers are trending in a positive direction. And unfortunately, if I really wanted to get different with my build, I could have taken Ben Silverman before I took Andrew Novak. I see 3% ownership. My model likes Ben Silverman this week. But now it has me in this spot. And I'll just speak openly on this of like options that are value for me for when we get into these spots here of that I can actually afford. K.H. Lee, when we get down into the $6,000 section, there's only two golfers for me that are inside of the top 39 of my model. That's Chandler Phillips, who has this really boom or bust profile. And then Lee Hodges, who my model had inside the top 35 for upside. So, you know, you have something to at least look into there for two low owned guys. I don't love this selection. I think that the ownership, I've seen it creeping up with the pick I'm about to make. I'll take K.H. Lee here. Off the tee metrics, if you want to date it back to about the last 8 to 9, he's gained in every single event. The approach play finally saw a turnaround for him at the Shriners. He gained 4.7. Also gained with the putter. I do worry about this pick, though. There's a lot of different ways I would rather go. Very bad from outside of 200 yards. Very questionable in my way to proximity returns. I guess, obviously, I could have taken Chandler Phillips from it, but I don't love this pick. I'm just taking the player that, from an overall rank perspective, was the best pick for me.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, look, I think that the audience have done a great job in this draft cast of putting pressure on you in terms of the lineup build, which you just love to see in any instance that that does happen. We love a little bit of rivalry.
I don't even have enough money to afford him, so that's not going to
Well, why do you think what you do? Salary gate here on the PJ Draftcast. Spence just tries to sneakily spend more money than he actually has. While you think about what the hell you're going to do in this situation, Spence, I just want to shout out to Stephen Sicily Kidd in the Wind Daily Sports Discord, also one of our authors and experts over at the Wind Daily Golf Team. He does all of our ownership numbers, some of the best projected ownership that you get in the business over at Wind Daily Premium. Last week, every week, he gives out a player who is the frisky biscuit, right? Who is a golfer who is under 7,000 and who is low owned. He just continues on an absolute tear with all of his results and his insane brain play, which is, again, another golfer in that similar vein, was K.H. Lee. They finished fifth. The frisky biscuit was Rico Hoey. They finished third. And it was just like extreme leverage delivered again from Stephen over at Wind Daily. Another great reason to jump into the description below and grab the promo so you can get access to not only his ownership numbers, but the insane leverage that you can gain getting guys at 4% ownership, I think K.H. Lee was in the end last week and finished fifth. And then Rico Hoey again, next to no ownership, finishing third, was incredible. So fantastic work from Stephen. Just want to shout him out. In the meantime, Ed says he is a legend. Albert says he's definitely awesome. What's not awesome is Spencer sneakily trying to spend more money than he actually has on the draft cast. So Spence, now that we've self-identified that issue, what are you going to do with your $7,000 that you have remaining?
As everybody can tell, this was the pick that I obviously wanted here after making selections that I couldn't take. I'll take Carson Young. You look at the ball striking marks from him. He's gained off the tee in, I believe, 10 straight tournaments. He's gained on approach very marginally in 5 straight. Better upside climber for me than a lot of the names in this range. I talked about Phillips. I think that might be a little bit more boom or bust than even this Carson Young route is here. And if we want leverage, you know, 2.5% ownership, there are a lot of worse routes we can go for a golfer that is inside the top 25 of my model for weighted scoring.
There you have it. Yeah, so I don't mind Carson Young at all. Definitely a player who can pop on approach. I think that's real key. I think another option in that range who, like, I think is really, like, low floor but potentially high ceiling, Justin Lauer, who we've seen previously has been really good on approach. But I think Carson Young's a fine pick. And I do like in a field like this, leaving a few hundred dollars on the table is not a bad thing whatsoever, because I think it just gives you some more options in terms of where you can go. I'm not going to leave any money on the table because I'm the defending champion of the Draftcast and I want to win again. So I'm going to go take Minwoo Lee. I don't think it's necessarily the best golf course fit for him in the entire universe, because we know that Minwoo Lee can struggle a little bit on approach. But where we have seen Minwoo Lee really play well is on these tougher course setups, things like the US Open, where you do need to compile a score and be a bit more strategic. Minwoo Lee has found success on those type of courses, and we've never really seen the score blow out at this tournament. The lowest winning score was Tiger Woods in the initial edition, when he won back in 2019, I want to say, and he shot minus 19 as the lowest score. But other than that, it's been 15 under or higher. So it is kind of a golf course where you've got to take your chances when they present. Minwoo Lee's always a chance of an eagle or two. I do think he possesses high upsides, and I'm getting that low enough ownership at 9,300, I feel, for a golfer of immense talent. He's only at 12% because you've got Justin Thomas right there at 25 and Kirk Kiyama at 22. I know that you like Justin Thomas as well, Spencer. I like him this week, and he'll be featured very shortly as we wrap up the Draftcast. Yeah, Zaxi's sneaky at Parkland courses. Yeah, we've seen that as well. A few club down spots. Minwoo Lee has played pretty well. Spence, while I bring this draft board down, we've got a little bit of time left. So I was just wondering if you have any thoughts here on Minwoo Lee.
I do actually. This actually takes me into a matchup that I have. And I want to, we'll take a little bit of a longer segment for this than I planned on giving. So one of the things that happens during no cut tournaments, and I think Minwoo Lee falls perfectly into this section, which is why I am afraid to take him on in this spot, to where when you find golfers with really high ceilings inside of my model and extremely low floors, typically in a tournament with a cut, that works very well because missed cut equity comes into play. It is much different for a tournament like this where you give the number one expected total driver, I obviously talked about that I added more weight to driving than most people that I had for this course. He's also an extremely good player from outside of 200 plus yards and has an ability to scramble in some of these spots. So I think you get a golfer here with a ton of upside. The one thing that keeps coming into play though for me is when we have a tournament that doesn't have a cut, I also want to take golfers that I like a little bit more. My narrative is always find fade candidates that I'm looking to take on. I've talked about Kitayama already a million times throughout this show. I bet Kurt Kitayama over Minwoo Lee at minus 115. That number has been more pushed up into that minus 125 to minus 145 range, depending on where you can find it. This is me backing Kitayama opposed to any semblance of the word of me fading Minwoo. I actually think he's an intriguing GPP target, but you have to know what you're signing up for with him, because there is an upside, but there's definitely a downside that's going to come into play. But, for a matchup here with a golfer that I think is the fourth rated golfer, I will take Kitayama in this spot.
Yeah, I actually like that a lot. I mean, look, if Kitayama had been on the board there with my final pick, I would have taken him over Minwoo Lee for sure. The approach metrics are there. And I think in terms of a matchup, that's ideally what you want, right? Because you are looking for that safety kind of aspect of a guy who can perhaps just exceed someone who has a bad week. And Minwoo Lee can be hit or miss with the approach, excuse the pun, but he really can be. And he's boom or bust, like, to the highest degree. Whereas Kurt Kitayama's showing some real consistency lately, especially with his ball strike, especially with approach. So I do like that from a matchup perspective. Moment you've all been waiting for, of course, is the first round leaders. Obviously, we hit 40-1 Taylor Pendrith last week. Huge victory. And as I said, what a week to hit a 40-1 first round leader along with the 35-1 outright. I've only got three to give out this week because one of them is fairly low odds and the other two aren't that much higher, to be fair. I'm going to go with Hideki Matsuyama at 17s. You can get him with five places over bet 365 as well to be the first round leader. In three of his last four starts, Hideki has started the first round in first, second, and second. So he has been consistently finding his way in these first rounds. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Hideki Matsuyama will be putting a lot of time and effort into this tournament because he has, the public have an expectation of Hideki Matsuyama when it comes to him playing in Japan. He is representing his nation. He is the flag bearer, basically, for their country in terms of golf. So he will come out firing, in my view. And 17s, I think, is great value compared to less than half of that for his win odds for the tournament as a whole. Justin Thomas, you mentioned at the top of the show, I really like a bounce back from Justin Thomas. As I mentioned, it's kind of similar narrative to Will Zalatoris in a way of Justin Thomas hasn't had a fantastic year. It's been better than last year, but it hasn't been a great year for Justin Thomas. He missed out on the President's Cup spot. That will sting for him. And he would have been putting time and effort in terms of getting prepped and showing up to the spot ready to play. So in his last five starts, three of those, he's finished first, second, and third after the first round. And I love his approach metrics, his correlation to Augusta National as well. I do think he wins a Masters at some point too. So I think that there's a nice correlation there with Justin Thomas, and 29s is a very generous number. And finally, wrapping up with Bo Hosler at 36s. He's had a first and fifth in two of his last five starts after the first round, and he was the 36-hole leader here last year, so he's turning up now in even better form. His game looks really on point. I think that he can go out and potentially spike a first round. I almost like this more than an outright because of the fact that we have seen him get speed wobbles towards the end of the tournament. Saw it last year when he finished second for us, when tipped at 40-1. He shot a 70 in the final round. It was really what cost him victory when Colin Morikawa came over the top of him, and I think at 36s for a first round leader, Bo Hosler is an interesting option. Spence, any thoughts on those before we wrap up the show?
I like the Justin Thomas call from you quite a bit. This feels like a very savvy spot to jump in on him for first round leader. The only other two names that I would add would be the two outrights that I talked about in Kitayama and Gim. I kind of agree with you though with this Justin Thomas play. I'll probably end up joining you on this before this is all said and done.
I just think that if he's at his best, he is never, ever, ever in this strength of field higher than 20-1. Like, he just never is. And we just haven't necessarily seen an absolutely dreadful Justin Thomas lately. Like, and he was bad. Like, he was really bad in 2023. I think a lot of people have given up their patience on Justin Thomas. He's won on tough tree line golf courses before, PGA Championship, for example. And he at his best is one of the best ball strikers in the game. Approach really does matter around this golf course. So, Spence, it's been an awesome evening. Great chatting to you. I hope Joel is out there somewhere in the wilderness having a fabulous birthday. We wish him a very happy birthday and having him on the show again shortly. You won't actually get to see me for a couple of weeks. I'm going overseas on a work trip, and then I'm coming back via Melbourne. I'll be visiting the Melbourne Cup when this show broadcasts next in 2 weeks' time. So for those based in America, it's like the Kentucky Derby of the rest of the world. It's one of the biggest horse races in the whole world. First time going, so it's going to be an awesome time. Looking forward to that. Spence, anything you want to add before we wrap the show up?
No, I do want to tell everybody, I know we're in the fall season right now, but we always get such a great turnout on this show. And without the audience, we wouldn't be able to do this every single week. So just want to give a shout out to everybody who tunes in, becomes a part of this draft with us, and it is just as much of this show, whether it's through the banter or through the picks. So, you know, thank you to everybody out there.
And ditto for me. I mean, kinder words have never been spoken on the PGA Draftcast, but we do have the best fans in the business. Thank you all so much for tuning in every week, making the show what it is. The banter is fantastic. You never hear those words uttered. Hey, Joel being on the show this week, would you say? That's fantastic to see as well. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Make sure you jump into the description below, grab the promo link, make sure you get all of our outrights. I feel another one coming soon. We're hitting them in an outrageous rate at the moment, but all I've really got to say,